The Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Split decision. That is our top story at noon. A mixed bag for Democrats and Republicans in yesterday's election. In Kentucky, Democrat Andy Beshear says he won the governor's race there.
The election is over. But next month, we start a brand new chapter here in Kentucky.
Republican incumbent Matt Bevin, though, is not giving up.
This is a close race. We are not conceding this race by any stretch.
Republicans held on to the governorship in Mississippi and in Virginia. Democrats took control of the state legislature for the first time in more than two decades. Political analyst Anthony Salvanto.
Certainly been, over the last few cycles, trending Democratic, and you know, we'll see. Democrats certainly would rely on that as part of their electoral college hopes going into 2020.
In New Jersey, Republicans able to pick up two seats in the state assembly and one in the state senate. As for those ballot initiatives across the country yesterday,
Tucson will not become Arizona's only sanctuary city, and the Democrats in control there are relieved because millions in state and federal funding would have been at risk. New York's become the biggest U.S. city to adopt ranked choice voting in some elections. That allows residents to name their top choice candidates in order. In neighboring Jersey City, new restrictions on Airbnb. Less than a year after Kansas City officials renamed its historic boulevard the Paseo after Dr. Martin Luther King, Kansas City voters have reversed that decision. And dry no more. The people of Argyle, New York have ended a ban on alcohol sales in place since Prohibition.
That's Vicky Barker reporting, a State Department official testifying behind closed doors in the Democratic impeachment probe. David Hale broke a string of Trump administration officials who refused to testify this week. He's telling investigators that political considerations fueled the ouster of U.S.-Ukraine ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. Today, the man heading up the probe, Democrat Adam Schiff, announced the public phase of the inquiry will start next week. Police in northern Mexico say they've got a suspect in custody for the massacre that killed three women and six children. The Mormon family on its way to a wedding in the States when they were killed. Authorities blaming it on a drug cartel.
There's got to be changes. There's got to be safety implemented. This doesn't only affect the Mexicans. It doesn't only affect the Mexican side. It affects a lot of people here, too.
That woman's cousin among the victims, correspondent Steve Futterman, says authorities still looking for answers.
U.S. officials believe it's very possible the victims were targeted. There had been some disagreements in the past between the breakaway Mormon group and the drug cartels. Another possibility is that the killers mistakenly thought the victims were members of a rival cartel. Still a third possibility is that those killed got caught in a crossfire and were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's Steve Futterman reporting. ABC News under fire for burying a story about the late Jeffrey Epstein. 3 years ago, anchor woman Amy Robach caught on a hot mic claiming the network refused to run her story that exposed the serial pedophile.
First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything. Do I think he was killed? 100%. Yes, I do. He made his whole living blackmailing people.
Conservative commentator Molly Hemingway says the hot mic incident proves beyond a shadow of a doubt the liberal bias of the mainstream media.
They have these ridiculously high standards when it comes to their friends or when stories might implicate their political allies. Right. But when it comes to other people, they have seemingly no standards at all.
Other people like Brett Kavanaugh.
ABC News went wild with ridiculous and uncorroborated allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, such as that he was the leader of a serial gang rape cartel that was roaming the suburbs of Maryland. They didn't care about standards when it came to putting the person making those claims on air.
Epstein died mysteriously in prison while awaiting trial back in August. The FCC has cleared the way for Sprint and T-Mobile to become one. That merger would create the third largest wireless carrier behind Verizon and AT&T. What's it mean for users?
It's going to end up costing consumers more to get mobile service. It's not going to be as good. It'll be degraded, and over time, there will be less push for innovation.
That's industry analyst George Slovert. Still to come this Wednesday, election results in New York and Pennsylvania, drag queen story time in Elmira, and the praying high school football players.
Good afternoon. All is quiet on the weather scene now, but for tomorrow, we expect rain to change to snow. I'll be back with forecast details in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Wednesday, November 6th. Just hours after a quiet election day in the city of Buffalo, FBI agents started searching City Hall. Officials with HUD and the IRS helping out in that search. It started this morning. Much of the activity taking place around the Office of Strategic Planning in Buffalo. Turnout light all across our listening area yesterday as voters went to the polls to decide their local elections. In Erie County, New York, Democrat Mark Poloncarz won a third term for county executive.
Today, the people of Erie County have spoken on the direction they want their community to go. Thank you to all who believed in our message of moving Erie County forward.
The Democrats also won the county executive race in Monroe County. County Clerk Adam Bello beat Republican incumbent Cheryl DeNoffel.
This campaign was really about the future of Monroe County. Talk about how we're delivering and creating that environment for economic opportunity for our young people.
And heading down the New York State Thruway to Onondaga County, Republican incumbent Ryan McMahon cruising to victory last night. He remains the county executive.
This election turned out to be about 2019 and about our future, and that's where we're looking moving forward.
The 57th state Senate seat in western New York will stay Republican. Chautauqua County Executive George Borrello, easily winning the seat left vacant by the retirement of Kathy Young. In Pennsylvania, meantime, the city of Scranton has its first ever female mayor.
I think people are hungry for a fresh perspective.
Paige Cognetti is a registered Democrat but ran as an independent. She'll serve out the remainder of former Mayor Bill Courtwright's term after he resigned last summer following federal bribery charges.
People are ready to move on from the corruption, and you know, being a woman is one thing. It's really exciting to make history tonight, but I believe that my experience, I think those things are really what pushed me over.
A controversial ballot initiative, meantime, in Pennsylvania that expands the rights for crime victims in the Commonwealth. Not known today, a legal challenge to Marcy's Law playing out in the courts. Christian activists are clamoring over a transgender event planned in Elmira, New York next week. The Steele Memorial Library hosting Drag Queen Story Time next Thursday at 6 p.m.
For those who are against it, then I simply say don't attend with your children.
Ronald Shaw, director of the Chemung County Library District, which owns the Steele Library, he was asked if Christian groups would have the same access to the library as the drag queens do.
We're a secular institution, so as long as it's books dealing with peace, understanding, and that sort of thing, which is what this story time will be dealing with, I don't think they'd have a problem.
Drag queens will be reading the book Frozen to children next Thursday night in Elmira, New York. Gary Ingram is with the group Love and Truth Network.
To invite children who are incredibly impressionable into something like this, where you have all of this gender bending, the confusion around it, I think, is just breeding greater and greater depression, anxiety in kids, and these kind of events foster this kind of confusion.
Ingram will be hosting an event this Saturday at the Family Life Center in Bath, New York, to counter the gender bender culture. Many Christians argue drag queen story time amounts to brainwashing at best and child abuse at worst. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signing a new law requiring death certificates in cases of opioid overdoses. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Addiction and recovery advocates are praising the move, saying it will help to better track which opioids are causing the most deaths. Advocates say with more accurate reporting under the new legislation, more grants can be awarded to counties combating the opioid crisis. That data can then be used to help change policy, educate youth, and help law enforcement. The new law takes effect immediately. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
A judge has denied a request to temporarily stop New York State's law banning religious exemptions to vaccinations for students. Supreme Court Justice Daniel Doyle ruled that the state has the authority to require vaccinations to protect public health. The judge also rejected the lawsuit claims by an Amish family that the new law is a violation of their religious rights. The Amish family's case involved unvaccinated kids attending a private Amish-run school in rural Seneca County, New York. A picture of a high school football player has gone viral. It shows the star athlete praying with his opponent on the field after a game.
You're playing the game, you're playing to win, and the other team is the enemy, but afterwards, you know, you still have the respect for the other opponent.
That's Sherman, Texas High School senior Gage Smith, who kneeled on the field with his rival, Ty Jordan, of West Mesquite High. Those two prayed for Jordan's mom, who's battling cancer.
To see that it blew up, I was very surprised by it, and I wasn't expecting it to be like that. You know, it was just doing it for him and doing it for his mom and his family.
Sherman football coach J.D. Martinez says Smith is a leader on and off the field.
Pretty special that kind of everybody gets to see really what he is. He's that type of kid all the time. It's just not in front of the cameras or anything like that. He's like that every day.
So far, that photo of the praying high school football players has gotten over 100,000 shares on Facebook. College basketball bounces back into action. Sunny time, 2 minute drop.
Yeah, a little history last night at Madison Square Garden. For the first time ever, the top four teams in the nation played each other in the regular season. Trey Jones led a balanced attack with 15 points. Number four Duke cut down number three Kansas 68-66. Great win, says Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah, it's a terrific win for us against what I think will be a championship contender in Kansas.
And the nightcap, Tyrese Maxey dropped in a game-high 26. Number two Kentucky beat number one Michigan State 69-62.
Ashton was on me, and Nate was on me about my spirit, just being happy, being smiling, boosting up my teammates, and that's one thing I feel like I did. Rallied us, helped us get rebounds.
And even though Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo said they didn't play quite well enough to win,
we're going
to
get a lot better. Most years they say, well, Kentucky's going to get a lot better because of their freshmen. Well, I think we were younger than them most of the time out there, and it was just disappointing because if you shoot a little bit better, you have a real chance.
To the NBA, the Lakers erased a 13-point fourth quarter deficit to beat the Bulls 118-112, led by LeBron James. Triple-double, 30 points, 11 assists, and 10 rebounds. His third straight triple-double. He's the oldest player in NBA history to ever do that.
I just try to put the ball on time and on target, and they've been doing that defensively, trying to, rebound as much as I can, even though I'm playing the point guard position. You know, a triple-double means absolutely nothing to me if it's not in a win.
To the ice, Islanders win their 10th straight, crushing Ottawa 4-1, Flyers over Carolina 4-1, Maple Leafs beat the Kings 3-1, and New Jersey beats Winnipeg in a shootout 2-1. College football, Ohio State number one in the first college football playoff ranking of the season, Buckeyes followed by LSU, Alabama, and Penn State in the top four. Clemson checks in at number five. That's the defending national champions, Georgia, Oregon, Utah, Oklahoma, Florida, rounding out the top 10. The top four at the end of the season will meet in the national semifinals. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Wednesday, suspect arrested in that Mexico massacre. We'll have the very latest. The voters have spoken. The results from Tuesday's election. And at the end of the broadcast, the turkey-flavored potato chip.
When a towering leader dies, we tend to look back at the impact they had. For the godfather of the intelligent design movement, the best direction to look is forward. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Reformation Day remembers how Martin Luther started a movement within the church that reshaped Christianity and the world. In many ways, Philip Johnson was a Luther-like reformer who's willing to question accepted dogmas and challenge stagnant thinking, and who sparked a movement that will long outlast his life. Johnson, who passed away peacefully in his home over the weekend, is widely considered the godfather of the modern intelligent design movement. His 1991 book, Darwin on Trial, revealed how Darwinian evolution was plagued by worldview level problems, most importantly, its reliance on philosophical naturalism. Now, before we go into what that is, it's important to note Johnson wasn't a scientist. He was a law professor at, of all places, California. Cal Berkeley. His legal training enabled him to both see and to point out Darwinism's flaws in a way that many scientists often couldn't and sometimes wouldn't. And his book refocused the origins debate to its most fundamental worldview question. For 150 years, Darwinists had claimed that blind and undirected natural processes were sufficient not only to create life from chemicals, but to produce the dazzling variety of life that we see in the world around us. Johnson wasn't buying it. He argued that the complexity and precision we see in nature was best explained by intelligence and purpose. After all, whenever we see a written text, we know it required an author. Whenever we experience a beautiful design, we realize there was a designer responsible for it. Well, if that's true across the world, it should be true for the origin of the world. Johnson's arguments inspired and effectively launched what became known as the intelligent design movement, most notably seen in the Discovery Institute. As Casey Luskin put it, the idea of intelligent design became a magnet for scholars from a variety of fields, biology, chemistry, physics, philosophy, theology, law, all of whom, like Johnson, saw Darwinism's fatal reliance on naturalistic thinking. Among them was biochemist Michael Behe, author of what may be the movement's best-known book, Darwin's Black Box. By challenging Darwinian orthodoxy, Johnson painted a target on his back, and he went on to experience what many other proponents of intelligent design have: personal attacks, blacklisting, accusations of being anti-science. But he took it all with a cheerful patience, and in doing so, not only launched the ID movement, he set its tone. One still heard in his successors like Stephen Meyer, Douglas Axe, Jonathan Wells, Ann Geiger, and others. Johnson's articulation that naturalism had not only poisoned science, but also law and ethics, shaped Chuck Colson's thinking, and consequently, shaped Breakpoint. Johnson's 1993 First Things article, entitled Nihilism and the End of Law, argued that if there is no transcendent origin for life, neither is there any transcendent basis for right and wrong. To outlaw theft, racial discrimination, or murder is to appeal not to any higher authority, but merely to majority vote, something that has a funny way of evolving. A quick search for Philip Johnson in our Breakpoint archives reveals the debt we owe to this first-class worldview thinker who understood the power of ideas to shape all of life. Johnson's significant work is best measured not by his own work, but by the movement he helped spark. Today on the Breakpoint podcast, I speak with someone who's part of the legacy of Philip Johnson, who knew him well. Dr. Jay Richards, senior fellow of the Discovery Institute, was deeply influenced by Johnson and joins me to talk about his life and legacy. Come to breakpoint.org to listen, or just search for the Breakpoint podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stonestreet.
20 minutes past the hour, Wednesday afternoon. Let's head outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, it's a quiet day today. We have a little messy weather on the way. A front will cross the area with some showers and flurries later tonight into tomorrow, and there'll be a transition to light snow enough to coat the ground and maybe slick in a few roads before the day is through. Our call for this afternoon: sunshine giving way to cloud cover with temperatures peaking in the 40s, dropping into the 30s tonight with a few late night showers of rain and snow. For tomorrow, it's a chillier day, a cloudy day, from north to south across the region. Light sprinkles and flurries will give way to a period of steadier snow with a light coating, and temperatures dropping into, if not through, the 30s. Brisk and cold on Friday with sun, clouds, and localized lake snow, and high temperatures only in the low or mid-30s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, November 6th. Still too close to call in Kentucky, where Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andy Beshear claiming victory over Republican incumbent Matt Bevin.
Kentucky sent a message loud and clear for everyone to hear.
But Bevin has refused to concede, saying he's not ready to throw in the towel just yet.
We are not conceding this race by any stretch.
President Trump won Kentucky by 30 points in 2016. Republicans held on to the governor's seat in Mississippi. Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves beat Democrat Jim Hood.
This victory does not belong to me. This victory belongs to you.
And the political tables have turned in Virginia, where a blue wave rolled through yesterday. Democrats now in control of both houses of the Virginia General Assembly for the first time in over 20 years.
When I say blue, I want you to say wave. Blue!
Political analyst Anthony Salvanto.
It's certainly been, over the last few cycles, trending Democratic.
56% of respondents in a new poll expect President Trump to be reelected next year. The Politico survey found high levels of enthusiasm for the election among Republicans and Democrats. 92% of respondents said they're likely to vote in next year's election. Passions for and against President Trump helping to fuel that enthusiasm. A suspect has been arrested in northern Mexico in connection with that attack that killed three women and six children.
Three vehicles with women and children in broad daylight. There was no mistaken identity.
Taylor Langford, the nephew of one of the women killed, he says the ambush targeted them.
No one could have gone and done that without knowing what they were doing.
Correspondent Mark Strassman has more, reporting from Mexico City.
29-year-old Christina Langford Johnson hid her baby on the floorboards by the back seat. Officials say she got out with her hands up, but was shot down in cold blood. Her baby, 7-month-old Faith, was found 11 hours later, unharmed. 13-year-old Devin Langford was able to hide six of his injured brothers and sisters in a nearby bush and cover them with branches. He walked 14 miles for help.
That's Mark Strassman reporting from the ashes of the Getty fire outside of Los Angeles. A firefighter found a ring in a box. Patty Shales says it belonged to her late mother.
I feel that she sent me this to tell me that she's in heaven and she's okay and that I'm going to be okay.
The ring survived undamaged, the home and everything else in it, a total loss. 24 minutes past the hour. Next at noon, we're going inside out with Martha Monicus Foster. Today's topic, how to have an attitude of gratitude this Thanksgiving.
Most of us enjoy Thanksgiving. We travel or we host, some cook, we all eat, and we spend time thinking about and talking about what we're grateful for.
Maybe it's going to be family, maybe it's going to be friends, maybe it's going to be neighbors, but we're going to give thanks for what we have together and right here in front of us right now, as well as for our shared place in the world and in history.
Unfortunately, the thankfulness, the gratitude, the very thing that brings us together on the fourth Thursday of November, it can evaporate by the next day. But could we kick off a daily habit of gratitude starting this Thanksgiving? I spoke with Amy Julia Becker, who's published widely and has written about gratitude in her article, This Odd American Holiday. She says there's a foundational attitude at the core of Thanksgiving that we might not expect.
In order to be thankful, we have to have some sense of humility and dependence.
Humility and dependence. That's because when we're thankful for something, we're acknowledging that someone else made it possible.
If I think I've earned everything that I have by my hard work and by my getting things right and getting things done effectively, well then who do I have to give thanks to? And what do I have to give thanks for?
A key moment for Becker as she thought about gratitude was when she shared a Thanksgiving table with a woman who just lost her apartment and all of her possessions in a fire. This woman, who in a sense had nothing, was able to recite a list of things she was grateful for.
It was actually out of that position of dependence and humility that she was able to give thanks, and that helped me to think about the same things in my own life.
A way to keep gratitude top of mind after Thanksgiving Day might be to ask ourselves the same question Becker asked herself after that meal.
Where am I really, truly dependent upon God, dependent upon other people, and how can I have the humility to recognize that and give thanks for it?
But being aware of reasons to be grateful is not the same thing as having an attitude of thankfulness every day.
I do think there's a practice that sometimes you don't feel thankful, and yet you can actually review, okay, is there something I can give thanks for? So there is an habitual practice of giving thanks that I think can be helpful in this.
And that kind of habit helps for those days when we just forget to pause and be thankful. But then there are the times when it's just harder to be thankful because of brokenness and sin and loss.
We can lament what is truly wrong, whether it's in the world or in our own lives, when there is real cause for grief.
But even in those times, maybe not at first, but eventually, we can usually find something to be thankful for. And as we make a habit of giving thanks, in time we grow to feel thankful.
But in all of those things, I think the practice of giving thanks is what we are instructed to do, and it really, eventually, I think that leads us to an experience of gratitude and not just the habit of saying thank you.
So how do we do this? There are a number of strategies. Becker's first strategy is one you would do on your own.
There have been times where I've used a journal and been very careful not to say I'm going to write a lot because that intimidates me and then I end up not doing it. But to say I'm going to write down one thing that I'm grateful for at the beginning or the end of each day.
Another habit that takes the idea farther is to take time at the end of each day to account for the best and the worst of the day, something some people call the consolation of the day and the desolation of the day.
I mean, it can take no more than 5 minutes, and yet, again, has really tuned my heart, I think, to being able to name these small and large things that I'm both sad about or angry about or frustrated about, but also that I'm really, really grateful for.
But you don't have to do this alone. You can also develop a habit of thankfulness with your family. On the evenings when the Beckers gather for dinner, each person at the table has a chance to name something from the day that they're grateful for.
I think that is just a practice that's been really positive for me and for our kids, and again, gives us a way to look for things that we're grateful for.
There are more ways to do this, but what's woven into them is the importance of pausing to identify what we have to be grateful for, and maybe writing it down or saying it out loud so that we really take seriously the gifts we've been given. And we might be surprised at the cycle of thanksgiving and giving that spirals out from daily gratitude.
When we are giving thanks, we have that experience of thankfulness, right? And it often inspires us to want to give. It gives us an energy.
Thanksgiving Day often wakes us up to how much we have to be grateful for. Thanksgiving daily has the potential for building that kind of appreciation throughout the year.
We're moving quickly. We easily forget what has happened. But if something can intervene to say, hey, but wait a second, is there anything to give thanks for and to name it, it really can transform over time, I think, who we are and how we operate and how we see ourselves and other people, and it can be really beautiful.
Amy Julia Becker talks more about daily gratitude in the 15-minute recording of our conversation. You can hear it and learn about her books and the article that inspired this conversation at fln.org/podcast. I'm Martha Menikas Foster with this Inside Out report on Family Life.
Thank you, Martha. Some great reminders there. Inside Out comes your way Wednesdays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While it's a quiet day today, we have a little messy weather on the way. A front will cross the area with some showers and flurries later tonight into tomorrow. And there'll be a transition to light snow enough to coat the ground and maybe slick in a few roads before the day is through. Our call for this afternoon, sunshine giving way to cloud cover with temperatures peaking in the 40s, dropping into the 30s tonight with a few late night showers of rain and snow. For tomorrow, it's a chillier day, a cloudy day, from north to south across the region. Light sprinkles and flurries will give way to a period of steadier snow with a light coating and temperatures dropping into, if not through, the 30s. Brisk and cold on Friday with sun, clouds, and localized lake snow, and high temperatures only in the low or mid-30s.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Finally at noon, if you like the taste of basted butterball turkey for Thanksgiving, you're going to love this new snack food. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
Pringles is releasing a turkey-flavored version of its popular chip. It's part of what the company is calling the Friendsgiving Turducken Kit, which will also include duck and chicken-flavored chips, along with cranberry sauce, stuffing, and pumpkin pie flavors. You can stack the three meat flavors together for a turducken chip medley. The chips go on sale online tomorrow. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. That is the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.